Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send us a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's show is sponsored by Eden Foods, one of the most trusted names in certified organic clean foods. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. Simply enter the coupon code ORGVIEW when prompted during checkout. That's ORGVIEW. For more special offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. We are at a critical point where so many species are on the brink of extinction. Primates are one of the endangered species that are hunted for food and captured for exploitation. On today's show, wildlife photographer, author, and environmental advocate Carl Amann is going to talk about this crisis and what we can do to protect all primates. So I'd like to welcome to the show Carl Amann. Good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to your questions.
Carl, before we begin, can you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yeah, I've lived in Africa now for close to 30 years, mostly here in Kenya, but have traveled very widely in other parts of Africa. And while I came here as a hotelier working for Intercontinental Hotels, I pretty quickly got into photography. The photography led to appreciating the nature around me and the wildlife in it, which was abundant and to some extent in some parts still is. And, you know, then I got on to building a tented camp in the Masai Mara, which is one of the prime tourism wildlife destinations, saw the problems developing there. I had another camp in the Virungas with the gorillas, which is in the Congo, where there's another total new set of problems. So I started on seeing more and more of what was impacting the natural world and these ecosystems and the wildlife in it. And I started to become more and more concerned about it, started to write about it, started to make documentaries about it, started to turn my photography from beautiful images to illustrating some of these realities. And that's what turned me into becoming more of an activist than I was when I started off with.
Thank you. Now let's talk about the habitat. What kind of environment do primates live in?
And when we talk about primates, you obviously have quite a wide range from Asia to South America to, of course, Africa. And, you know, I've been concentrating in the last 2 decades mostly on documenting, filming, photographing, and now, you know, taking into consideration conservation aspects as concerns the great apes. The great apes are the pinnacle of the primate families. They are our closest animal relatives. We are essentially great apes as well by, you know, the family tree we belong to. So the feeling is if we can do nothing for them, then what can we do for the lesser primates? But primates live obviously in the forest most of the habitat is forest. But some have then evolved to living in savanna or near the savanna edges and moving into the savannas. Today you have primates which pretty much live exclusively in the savanna. So you have a range of habitats primates feel comfortable in, but as I said, my emphasis has been mostly on the great apes, the orangutans, the chimpanzees, the gorillas, the bonobos, and they all live in forest. Chimps do venture out into savanna, but their prime habitat is forest.
Thank you. Why would people opt to eat them for food? And can you share with the listeners what exactly happens when they are hunted?
Okay, as far as you know, people eating primates, there's several aspects to that. And that is, you know, in many parts of Africa, people still hunt for the pot. That means they're subsistence hunters. And primates to them are no different from a duiker, which is a small antelope or a hare or anything else. So they will hunt primates, and that has been going on for millennia. And some tribes have taboos when it comes to the great apes, because they accept that they look and behave pretty much like us, but many tribes don't. But that was one aspect which was probably sustainable up to recently. But what has happened in the last three decades is the fact that the logging companies have moved into these forests. They have opened them up with roads. With the roads have come lots of settlers, new communities settling in the forest, their own workforce, and a lot of lorries traveling to urban centers. So now what's happening is people will hunt the monkey in the morning for the pot, and then why not go out and hunt another one which they can sell to a logging lorry driver, which will sell it in the capital for big money, and they can cash in on that. And so the subsistence hunting has gone to commercial hunting, and that is no longer sustainable in many of these areas, and that's going on. Plus, once this meat reaches the urban markets, it's more expensive than beef or pork, meaning, you know, the middle class or the upper class in the capitals and in the big cities, they are willing to pay substantial more for, let's say, gorilla meat or chimpanzee meat or elephant meat than they would pay for beef or pork or chicken.
Interesting. In regards to the exploitation of primates, can you share with our listeners, especially for people that really have no idea what's going on, how and why are primates being exploited? What is the benefit?
Okay, if we start off with the bushmeat side of it, obviously the parents are eaten. If an orphan comes on stream, then and the dealer comes along and is willing to buy it, then why not sell it? But I mean, that's the first step. A lot of orphans which come on stream are byproducts of the bushmeat trade. But again, there has been a more recent development, and that is a lot of the developing economies of the world with a new middle class suddenly has people who were seeking entertainment. One form of entertainment with family type of entertainment is going to zoos and safari parks. And in places like China, pretty much every zoo or safari park has a showground where animals are meant to perform, or performing, from elephants to bears and to primates. And some of the most popular performers are the great apes, the chimps, and the orangutans, because they are so much like us, and they get the biggest laughs and so on. So these zoos and safari parks pay big money. That has, for these primates, for these apes, that has resulted in a new development where people specifically go or order primates, and hunters are being dispatched specifically to get orphans to supply this new demand characteristic of supplying these new entertainment facilities. And that additional threat, on top of all the others, habitat loss and general hunting for bushmeat, most of these primates will not last very long with these additional threats.
What are some of the challenges that you're dealing with in order to bring about awareness to these issues?
When you talk about the bushmeat side, of course, you have that argument, people need to live, and therefore, how can we stop them hunting pretty much anything they feel like hunting, including elephants? And then, you know, you come to the fact that, you know, these countries all have laws, that all these laws govern what is legal to hunt and what is not legal to hunt. They govern the seasons when hunting is allowed and when it's not allowed. And to then accept that local communities have a right to disrespect those national laws because just they happen to be poor, will result in them wiping out these resources, and they're going to be the ones who are paying the biggest price. So, you know, I feel the message should be for national governments and the international community to put pressure on national government to enforce national laws when it comes to hunting and exploitation of wildlife in the interest of these very communities. If it's sustainable, then they will have it much longer than if they hunt everything out in the next decade, which is what is happening now. So, you know, I have had a problem trying to explain that, because basically people say, okay, how do you tell a poor person not to shoot the monkey when he sees one? So this is my side of the argument. Now, when it comes to the exportation and importation and big trader getting involved and tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars changing hands, then you're obviously talking big business. And in the case of China, it's actually a parastatal company, a government company, which handles the transactions, the imports on behalf of the Sioux, and it looks like it's officially sanctioned by the top Chinese authority. The policy is, let's get our hands on as much endangered and protected wildlife as we can, trying to do it as legally possible. But if it means bending the laws, then let's bend the laws. And we then breed them ourselves, so we are no longer needing the resources of Africa. So, you know, that takes me to the other argument of banking on extinction, which is also discussed with rhino horns and with ivory and with tigers, where there's many of these players in this business wanting these species to go extinct because the stocks they're sitting on, is it breeding animals or is it a few thousand kilos of ivory in a store, becomes all much more valuable once the species goes extinct or becomes very rare. So these people fight back, and they don't always fight nicely. That's the fact of life.
Now, this organization that you mentioned, can you elaborate what the organization is?
I mean, in the context of the international trade of great apes, they're all CITES I. CITES is the convention which regulates the trade in protected species across international borders. And it's a Geneva-based UN body. Most of the enforcement is left to the countries concerned, but they're supposed to stick to rules and regulations. And if they don't, then the Secretariat can recommend their expulsion. So there is a certain amount of enforcement power there. But anyway, going back to the apes, we now have about 135 chimps, 10 gorillas, quite a few orangutans, and to countries like Armenia and Russia, also bonobon, which is the pygmy chimpanzees, which we know have been illegally exported. They have been declared as captive-born. They were all wild caught. Captive-born would give them less protection under this convention than wild-born. So the permits were falsified. Criminal acts were committed in issuing these permits. But the Secretariat of CITES, which has this power to sanction countries or recommend sanctions in the form of suspension from trade, is not willing to go that route. Or if they do, they go after countries like Guinea, but they will never touch countries like China. And in this particular case, we have exposed as a large-scale exports of primates, and also seems to have involved elephants, manatees, gravy zebras, all kinds of other species. There's nothing happening because you can't go up against China if you are a UN employee waiting for his next promotion. That seems to be one of the key motivating factor. If you spoil it with the Chinese, then your career path in the UN system might be limited. So that's what I've been fighting against, and as I said, I've gone to the point where I feel we have documented with solid facts and evidence that there is a cover-up taking place by the Secretariat to not see China exposed for their lack of due diligence in the import of all these apes and other wildlife.
Carl, what can people do to help?
You know, I feel that the public has to show it cares. I mean, these policymakers, they're quite happy to go from conference to conference and have a cup of coffee with each other. They know each other for years, the guys who make these policies and these decisions. They all have their skeletons in the closet. Nobody wants to expose the other guy's skeleton because of the skeleton. He has his own closet. So unless there is public pressure, nothing will happen. The inertia is too great in these UN's biodiversity conventions and systems. So if the public stood up, that means if enough people voice their opinion, sign down to petitions, which ended up in Geneva on the desk of the decision makers, if they had to find out that lots of people do care, the U.S. has a CITES management authority which can raise these issues at these upcoming meetings and so on, can ask relevant questions, can analyze and view the evidence if they want to, and they can, you know, say that our voters, our taxpayers have expressed an interest in this issue, and we feel like we want to, you know, do what's right by our voters and taxpayers. So if we can get it to that level, there's a hope that something will change. But without the masters voicing their viewpoint, nothing will change.
Thank you. And lastly, Carl, what message would you like to leave with our audience as far as why they should be concerned?
You know, my feeling is, I said, I live in Africa. I've seen things getting drastically worse in the last 30 years. I have poaching going on my own property, which never happened before. If we lose this iconic species, we're going to lose much more down the line. We're going to impact ecosystems, which we will need for our own survival. These species are a key part of the ecosystem, and if they're gone, they will be affected. That goes for the oceans and what we're doing to the fish in the ocean as well. So, you know, our lifeline is being impacted by this as well. So it is not just the animals, it's going to be us at the end of the day. And I keep saying, if the chimpanzee, for example, which is 98.6% genetically human, has emotions similar to ours, you know, can mourn, has that, this is very close to us. If we cannot do anything for them, and the remaining chimps in the world now fit into a stadium, into a big soccer stadium, that's all which is left. If we cannot do anything for our closest animal relatives, we will not be able to do anything for ourselves when the time comes. And I feel the time is near where we are going to pay the ultimate price.
Carl, thank you so much for being on the show today. Folks, for more information, please check out the companion article, which is available on theorganicview.com. And also, check out some of the social media campaigns that are going on and get involved. Sign the petitions, take action, and do whatever you can, because after all, the children of today are the ones who are going to be inheriting the world that we leave them. Have a great afternoon, everyone.